America and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Pat will be here with us a little later on. He's currently in the midst of things and stuff. But he'll be here, you know, once he gets around to it. This episode is going to be for September 21st, 2019. Wow, time sure does fly by, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And next time next week, it'll be October.
Yeah.
Damn. I'm looking forward to it because hopefully I won't go outside and melt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, immediately on contact. But, anyway, so, this week, amongst other things, California passes a new law, and anti-vaxxers are a bunch of spoiled children.
Mm-hmm.
There's now a wearable chair, and I now fear for humanity. KFC is once again redefining what makes a sandwich.
Because of course they are.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
SNL hires and then immediately fires a guy who made some racist shit on a podcast. Big Bang Theory is now going to be on HBO Max. I hope it stays there and never comes back. We have celebrity death we'll be talking about. Oh, yeah. And the Trump administration, there's still a bunch of assholes. And they get up to three stories for this particular edition. All that and more on this exciting edition of Let's Weekend. So, start us off as always. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So, I finally finished Oathbringer. So, I'm all up to date on the Stormlight Archive again. Yeah, it was great. But because, apparently I hate myself, now I'm pondering re-listening to the entire Wheel of Time series again.
Oh, my God.
You just like pain?
Well, the TV show just started shooting, so it seems like, you know, a fitting way for me to, like, commemorate that.
When was the last time you did that, actually?
About 2 years ago.
All right, so it is still relatively fresh. Okay.
Yeah, I generally do it about every 2-3 years, and we'll go through it. And it's a surprisingly enjoyable series.
Yeah.
It's long as all fuck, because...
so long that, you know, the author died and they had to get someone to finish the last three.
Yeah.
Well, which was originally supposed to be just one book.
Yeah. Even if Robert Jordan had stuck around, I don't think it would have stayed one book.
No.
There's no way.
It would probably have ended up five.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Brandon Sanderson does have a way of making things a little bit more concise. So... that was good. But yeah, 15 books. Very tempted to start again, or maybe just start something different that I'm that I've been meaning to get to, so I might do that. I don't know. It's still up in the air. But yeah, apart from that, I've just been playing a crap ton of PC Building Simulator, because I really enjoy that. Yeah. I'm getting some very interesting clients.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just leave it at that. So, yeah. And the free build is still fun, but it's a little overwhelming because you have everything unlocked at the start when you do free builds. So it's like, yeah, what am I going to do? Well, whatever the fuck I want. How do I do custom loop water cooling? I don't know. There's no tutorial. Let's figure that out as you go. The only way to get to know how to do that is to actually get the parts inside of the career mode, and then you get a pretty decent tutorial on how all that stuff fits together. So, yeah, the career mode actually is worth going through, and it's fun, it's enjoyable, and I wouldn't say it's not repetitive, because it absolutely is.
Oh, yeah.
But it's still a good deal of fun, and they have those tool upgrades that you can get, which they're a little bit on the expensive side, but they do save you a lot of time for doing things like connecting cables and screwing stuff in and cables that connect themselves, which is really freaking weird to watch, but also kind of fun. So, it's a good game. I recommend people check it out on whatever platform you like to build PCs on. maybe the PC. That seems like the right place to do it, but you can do it anywhere, like on the Switch or PS4 or Xbox One. So,
yeah.
See you.
All right. Teresa, what about you?
I have been watching a little bit of Schitt's Creek, trying to get current on that. God, the acting is just getting more and more phenomenal the longer I watch it, which is no surprise. You know, they've got some heavy hitters in there. So I also got Link's Awakening, and I've been playing that, as has like half of freaking everybody I know. It's like I got on Facebook and everybody else apparently bought it. Even though didn't we all play this like 25, 26 years ago?
Nope.
You didn't?
No, I didn't have a Game Boy until 15 years ago. I got it for free.
Well,
Came with Tetris, so that was all I needed.
I didn't have a Game Boy either, so I will admit it wasn't 26 years ago for me. But yeah, I actually remember some of it, which is surprising because I can't remember, you know, what I did 5 seconds ago. So I like it, but it just reminds me so much of the old Rick and Bass cartoon. You know, the Christmas one with the
Rudolph Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah, and the elf that wants to be a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Herbie? That's my
favorite part. Yeah, something like that. That's my favorite part, the little elf. He wants to be a dentist. Who wants to be a dentist? But yeah, I think I'm in the third dungeon, but I just got it last night, so. Yeah. And other than that, I've been spending money, Link's Awakening being part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the amiibo. It was on sale, so it wasn't that bad. But I bought a used saxophone from 1980, so that's random, but happening. And there's like one key that needs to be fixed, so we'll get that fixed. And then we're not renting two instruments. We'll just own one and rent one. Mm-hmm. And I took my cat to emergency vet like a couple nights ago.
Oh, yeah, she passed a clot, didn't she?
She passed two blood clots. That
wow.
The vet was like, holy crap, that was just as painful as a kidney stone, I'm sure.
Yeah, so, if the vet says that,
yeah,
that's usually a sign that, well, yeah.
Yeah. She was like, that is actually a significant amount of blood, because, you know, I had a little piddle pad in the carrier and she was still screaming in the carrier. Cause within 20 minutes, I knew I needed to take her to the vet. She was still screaming in the carrier until about 5 minutes before I got there. And, when we took her out of the carrier, we saw it, and it was sizable for a cat. Holy crap. So yeah, that wasn't as bad, you know, cost-wise as you think a nearly 11 p.m. appointment or a vet visit would be. So she got medicine and the antibiotics are working just fine, and she got painkillers, and she's a very happy cat now.
Good.
So yeah, she ate some chicken liver tonight and some chicken and her regular stuff, and she's drinking water again and everything is good. So let's just knock on wood, because she's not a young cat.
No.
So yeah, that's been pretty much it. And I will continue to spend money because, you know, I'm breathing. So what about you, Chris? What have you been doing?
So I watched the first season of Disenchanted, the Matt Groening show that's on Netflix.
Yeah,
I liked it a lot. It kind of weirdly meanders for about half of the season.
Well, that's partly because the thing is, if you're going to watch that show, don't expect like a fantasy version of Futurama.
No.
Yeah. That's not really what it is.
It's not really that kind of like, oh, here's the thing we do each episode.
Yeah, it's like, not that kind of show.
Yeah, it's telling a story, but it kind of takes its time to get to the jump, which is like the last two episodes, where it's like, oh, okay, here's really what's going on here.
Yeah.
It's not just being kind of fucking around for 8 episodes with Elfo and the demon. I forget what his name is.
Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, yeah, once you kind of get to the point where it's like, all right, we've gotten over the hump of these characters just kind of fucking around, that's where it kind of picks up. It's like, okay, I'm going to be watching season 2 hopefully tomorrow and playing some games.
Wait, yeah. Season 2's out already?
Yeah, came out on Friday.
Oh, god damn it.
That's why I was watching season 1. Because, like, I remember watching it and kind of, it was just kind of on at a certain point, and I just blanked on what happened outside of the first, like, couple episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're trying to marry off Bean constantly and everybody dies. Trying to do that, so... so I kind of just decided, let's just sit down and watch this and see how it goes, and then we'll move on to season 2.
Mm-hmm. Scott and I actually did a watch-along podcast for almost all of season 1 for Disenchantment.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I don't know that anybody appreciated it. I don't know.
Yeah, now it's kind of picked up, like, feels like it has a purpose for what these characters are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's kind of really piqued my interest, so I'm going to check it out over this next week.
Yeah.
I also found time to watch the Between Two Ferns movie, which is as fun and stupid as you would expect it to be. It's kind of weirdly not what I thought it was coming out of the trailer, so it's kind of a mockumentary about the Between Two Ferns series, where they have this like public access show that in North Carolina that Zach Galifianakis, he's kind of acting as like just a random local that is kind of stupid, running this like talk show and constantly insulting celebrities that for whatever reason decide to come onto this local access show to get interviewed by this guy. And Will Ferrell plays Will Ferrell, the head of Funny or Die. Which, funny enough, they present Funny or Die, like, they show the headquarters, like, this gigantic corporate building. Like, okay. And he's just, like, he's got this, like, counter that's supposedly showing the clicks. He's like, it's got 500 trillion clicks, and it's, like, 500 billion, actually, on there. They have some, like, thing that's going on. They introduce, like, the crew, it's 3 other people. One is like his assistant that gets all the celebrities on. The camera guy named Cam. It's like Cameron, nicknamed Cam, Camden, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, you think my nickname is Cam because my name is Cameron? He's like, no, it's because I'm a camera guy. It's not kind of thing. It's very dry in the humor, but. And then the third one is the person does like makeup and all that sort of stuff. And she really enjoys like getting hit on by celebrities, the men that show up and then just tell them to fuck off. That she's got better things to do like watching Netflix. They have one episode where there's like construction going on, trying to fix some water line issue. And there's like leaks in the building, and specifically in the studio, and you find out that because of the leaks and all that, it's like lots of noise, and so the assistant's like trying to figure out ways to soundproof the room, so she like caulks the door so it's kind of sealed shut.
Oops.
So when the water line breaks in the room, just fills it up. Kills Matthew McConaughey. For like a few minutes, they resuscitate him and bring him back to life. But also, like Zach's character's concerned that the ferns drowned, and that's what he's more concerned about. But yeah, as a result, Will Ferrell tells them they need to film 10 episodes in the next like 2 weeks. They need to go on the road to do it. And if they do that, then Zach gets a late night talk show. And he says he wants a lifetime late night talk show. Like, what he's saying is for the rest of his life. And then Will Ferrell's like, we're going to get you a late night talk show on Lifetime Channel, sort of thing. And so they go on this road trip. Lots of stupid stuff happens. They talk to a bunch of celebrities. He insults a lot of them. Sleeps with Chrissy Teigen, then has an interview with John Legend the next day.
I'm sure that went well.
Oh yeah, he's very nervous, and then John Legend reveals that he knows what he did at the end. And I think kicks him in the nuts, something like that. There's lots of good stuff in that movie. And they're doing a funny bit at the end when after the credits, they just show like bloopers of Zach asking questions. So like one, he has Brie Larson's like, so I know that you don't like personal questions. Or he's like, this is a two-parter. So you don't like personal questions, and when did you have your first period? Kind of thing, like just
yeah,
really going in on that sort of stuff. Like John Hamm's like, so Bradley Cooper writes and directs and stars in, was it the musical that he did last year with Lady Gaga?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
I forget what it is, but that movie that did really well.
Oh, like, so Star is Born.
Yeah, he's like talking about that. He's like, so does that make it easier for mediocre male actors to get gigs like that? handsome idiots getting gigs. John Hamm starts laughing at the bad take sort of thing. There's a bunch where Zach's sort of ask questions straight face, just laughs because he just can't ask his own questions straight faced. But yeah,
I miss those blooper reels like during credits. Those were fun.
Yeah, it's real fun because there's some question stuff that they don't actually ask in the movie. Because I imagine they just realize like this is just a stupid joke we're going for, or whatever. Or it's more fun as like a blooper thing to try, sort of thing. But yeah, he has a really good bit with Benedict Cumberbatch trying to just figure out his name. but yeah, that's a really fun movie. It's not too long, maybe like an hour or so. It's worth watching. As for games, played some Link's Awakening, which I hadn't really played until I think the 3DS Virtual Console release. And kind of bounced off of it at a certain point. So kind of coming to this, I got it at Walmart, where it's $50 while I was shopping there. And I've been liking it so far. I did a stream on Friday, and you can see the performance issues that are not great at all. It basically seems like any areas with a bunch of grass, it hitches up a little bit. Which, if you know the layout of the main town, there's a huge patch of grass in there. So anytime you get close to the town, the performance drops. There's an immediate area to the east of it that is also just all grass. So yeah, there's different areas where like, okay, there's gonna be a ton of grass here because this is frame rate's dropping right now.
You'd think they would have learned because that was kind of the similar performance issues that they had with Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, maybe that's just an issue with the engine. That for whatever reason they haven't been able to figure out how to avoid with the Switch. But yeah, they've made some good improvements on it that makes it easier for a dummy like me to play it, which was fun in the stream because I was like, I can't figure out this, how to get further in the first dungeon. Because I didn't realize you had to hold the shield on the spike dudes to knock them over. I just never figured that out. So I was like, okay, these guys, I can't attack them. Maybe I'll get something later, like bombs or something to take them out. But the weird card suit puzzle, I couldn't figure out because I thought I had done the thing where you get all of them the same suit, and that didn't do anything. But I guess
I
didn't.
Did you have to get like which one did you do?
I just picked one, the green one, whatever that was. Once you get them all the same, you get the reward, which is the beak for the owl's statues, which gives you some hints.
I did it, and I'm like, well, okay, it's probably just three of a kind and not one specific suit.
Yeah.
And I couldn't remember that from
I think it's three of a kind.
Yeah.
Which in the second dungeon, there's a similar kind of puzzle, but it's there's three enemies in the room, and you have to figure out which way to kill them.
Yes.
And yeah. I had to get the beak, and it's like, oh, here you kill this one first and this one last. Like, okay, now I know what to do.
Yeah, that one set me back a few minutes too.
So once I got out of that first dungeon, everything else was chugging along fine. Especially it gets real good when you get the when you got Bow Wow with you. Yeah. It was the chain chomp that gets kidnapped by the moblins. As they keep saying, and I was like, I just want to keep this thing because he just fucking wrecks everything. He kills everything in one hit when he gets hit on them. And that seems like that would be very much like a kid mode thing they should offer. It's like he can just tags along and helps like a kid that's having trouble get through dungeons or whatever. But Nintendo doesn't like accessibility options because there's no options, I think, in this game. I don't think there's any options menu. Which I don't think you can control Link with the D-pad. I don't know if the D-pad does anything, but it didn't seem to do anything when I was using it.
I don't know,
it's
but I kept
all stick-based.
Like in the first two dungeons, I kept dying and screwing up because I was having some really significant Joy-Con drift.
Yeah.
And I made sure I was up to date and I recalibrated and still, so I said F it and pulled out another Joy-Con.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm going to have to get that fixed.
Yeah, that would definitely help in this game.
Yeah, because I kept going into the next room and going way over to the left.
Yeah.
And then whenever I hit the crystal to, you know, to make the things go up and down, he would stay there and hit it again. And I'm like, stop it.
Yeah, it's the hard mode. Or it's just repeating inputs over and over again. But yeah, I'll probably talk more about it tomorrow. But yeah, the archive of the stream is up on our YouTube channel. I would recommend people that haven't seen the game yet to take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also kind of just having a walkthrough open up just so I know. So I get any like bad spots, like I don't know what to do. I'll just pull it out. And like, okay, that's what I need to do.
Yeah,
kind of thing. The extreme way that everything respawns, like grass and all that, is ridiculous. You leave the screen and it respawns back.
Yeah.
So like, it's good if you're trying to spam, like take out that grass in the town, just get money real quick to go into the crane game.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, or get one of the items in the shop if you need that. But otherwise, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I saw your thing where you were trying to get the Yoshi doll.
Yeah.
And it took me four times because it kept dropping. It wouldn't go onto the floor.
Yeah, like, it dropped on the wood on the side of the belt that pops it out. It's like it moves for like a half second and it's like, oh, we're not going anymore. Like that's the only part of the game that has actual physics in it.
Yeah, I think four times was pretty excessive there.
Yeah. And I eventually got it. I was like, fuck the kid. I'm taking this thing.
What?
Because I took forever to get this damn thing. I eventually gave it to him. But I was,
yes.
When I went to go give it to him, I was like, oh, you're going to give it to him? I was like, nope. it's like, ah, give it to him. I don't know why this kid needs a Yoshi. He's a fucking baby.
Right?
He doesn't care what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's lots of stuff to go get in that crane game that seems to pop in every so often.
Yeah, I like going back and checking it out. And I had absolutely no trouble with anything else besides the Yoshi doll.
The Goomba I had trouble with because it was on the moving platforms.
Yeah.
Getting the timing on that is real tough. Especially because I would get it almost right and it would just close as it's moving out. It's like, oh, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it's good to... And the problem is if you leave to go get more money, everything gets reset.
Yeah.
So if you make progress and run out of money, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just go in with like 300 rupees and like, all right, we're sitting here until I get this shit. But yeah, we'll talk more about that tomorrow. I also got Borderlands 3, which I'm liking so far. Definitely it's a sequel to Borderlands 2.
Yeah.
That's really all you need to say, because
It's not like a generational change of Borderlands. It's very much that there are definitely things that I think they could have improved upon, like the map, trying to follow the map, like where a quest marker is at is just annoying. Especially because that game has performance issues, but it's all in the menus. Trying to change the pages in the menus is always causing hitches. And it's real fucking annoying when you just need to check the map or something like that real quick. But yeah, the map, like, it just shows you where the area is for the specific quest you need to go through. But trying to figure out, like, oh, which path do I have to take to get this? It's always more annoying than it should be. Because there's no, like, there's no guidance in the game. It doesn't, like, give you, like, oh, you should go this way to do this. Which is kind of annoying. And I did find it weird that they only dropped 3 kinds of weapons for the first couple hours. I think it's pistol, SMG, and shotgun. That's all it drops. Which was kind of annoying at times. And then before I got to Sanctuary, I accepted some of the mail that they send you, like mail items. So my inventory just filled up real quick, and I did. It was like special items that you get from bosses and such. They have like special perks that I wanted to keep around, and so I didn't no place to store it till I got to the Sanctuary. So it was a lot more inventory juggling than I wanted. One of the things they did add from Diablo is the like the loot goblin kind of thing, but here like their little people are called Tinks, I think it is. And the loot Tinks, when they show up, they throw out like dozens of weapons. So if you're trying to even collect as much as you can to take and sell, like it's way more. And I had one area, I think in the final mission before you get to Sanctuary, I had 3 spawn in the same area. So I literally spent like 10 minutes just like looking through everything, trying to figure out like, okay, what's all of the worthwhile stuff to take at least? That sort of stuff. That inventory stuff. But once I got to the Sanctuary ship, you can buy like inventory upgrades to get you some more space, which is where that gets to be a lot more manageable. But yeah, like up front, it's pretty harsh on the inventory limits. But yeah, it's been pretty good so far. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it. Also did some other streams this week. What did I play? I played on Thursday. I played Yoku's Island Express, which is a great sort of puzzle or a pinball, like Metroid-like game that is really well done. That people should definitely check out. It's on sale on the Switch right now until like next week. It's $10, but the music's fantastic. The action's actually really well done. And yeah, it was a lot of fun to jump back into that and play some more of it. And I forget what else. No, I did Borderlands on Tuesday, since that's when I got that. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Did Link's Awakening yesterday since we didn't have the show. And tomorrow I'm probably going to play The Sojourn, which I just got a code for. And that's kind of it. How about you, Brandon?
Anybody out there who's looking for my Astral Chain review on Smashpad? I'm still working on it. It's still coming. I got kind of sidetracked with some stuff this week.
Sidetracked.
Yeah, that kind of took my attention elsewhere. But I am working on it, and it will be coming sooner rather than later. Just be patient. Other than that, yeah, I've been playing more Borderlands 3. Still Borderlands. And that's about, I mean, it is very much, I gotta admit, there is something weirdly charming about the fact that it seems so retro, even if by retro it's like, what, 2015?
Yeah.
2012 was the last one.
Yeah. Because it's very much like, okay, for one thing, the character models are definitely more advanced, a little bit more advanced than they were last time around.
Mm-hmm.
But It's still very much, you know, the Borderlands style.
Hmm.
It's all very cel-shaded. Movements are a little bit robotic. But it's still the same game. So, basically, this time around, what's happened is that, again, you're a vault hunter, as always, and you end up going to Pandora, and, oh, there you find out that all the psychos and the bandit groups, that basic clans that run around Pandora, have all united and joined up following these two douchebags called the Calypso Twins, who basically run a giant cult called the Children of the Vault. And they basically worship the twins as living gods.
And they're influencers.
Yeah, they're social media influencers. That's how they do it. which is both really funny and also really cringy at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is basically how Borderlands humor works. So basically, once again, what you're doing is the Calypsos are looking for something called the Great Vault, which, according to them, is something that they were born to have. It's like their birthright. And since they're a bunch of assholes, you figure, okay, it would probably be a good idea if we got to the Great Vault first before they did. So what happens is you end up on Pandora, and you meet up with Lilith, a.k.a. the Firehawk, you know, the one of the... pretty much like one of the two or three remaining sirens in the franchise.
Yeah, the siren from the first game.
Yeah. She's been there since the first game, basically. Only they didn't actually give her actual, you know, personality until the second one.
Yeah.
But she's got like a group called the Crimson Raiders, which was the group that, you know, came into existence during Borderlands 2. And you're kind of going back and trying to sort of reconnect with a bunch of the other people. So you'll be reconnecting with both, you know, the surviving characters from the first and second games, that you played as at one point or another, or encountered at one point or another. Not all of them survive Borderlands 3. I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there. But others do. And the big difference this time around is that you're not just stuck on Pandora the whole time. You actually get to go around the solar system to the various different planets. And because basically what you're doing now is that because of the map that you found at the end of Borderlands 2, you find out that there are a bunch of vaults all over the solar system. And there are also, you know, fragments to the keys that you can use to get into those vaults. So that's basically what you end up doing, going around the various parts of the solar system, getting the key fragments and opening up the various vaults. Of course, this time around, you got four new characters to play. I ended up playing Amara, who is the badass Indian chick with the abs. So, you know, I was like, yep, that's right up my alley. I'll take
and
that.
And I took Moz, the mech woman. Essentially, yeah. This game's D.Va.
Yeah.
At least in terms that she, her special is she gets into a mech suit.
Yeah. But yeah, so I've been playing that, and it's, you know, if you like Borderlands, you'll like Borderlands 3. It's like really that simple. it doesn't really innovate all that much, but
lots of loot. Still,
you don't really have to. It's Borderlands. It ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, the weird thing is, like, there's a lot more, like, animation to the enemies.
Oh, yeah.
They run around a lot more, like, the psychos just leap at you, which
is
really kind of dumb, because it's like, I just move back a little bit and just keep shooting at you.
Well, that's the point. Remember, they're called psychos for a reason.
Yep.
Other than that, okay, so next one I got to kind of explain a little bit. So the Nostalgia Critic... he recently did his video review of Pink Floyd's The Wall. I don't know how many of you have ever seen that movie before.
Years ago, but yes.
Yeah. Okay, so everybody knows Pink Floyd. They made that album, The Wall.
Mm-hmm.
Good. And then they made a movie to go along with it, which is mostly known for the animated portions that are like maybe a quarter of the movie in total.
Yeah.
And so amongst other things, he teamed up with Corey Taylor to play the part of Pink in what ended up being less a review of The Wall and more of like a parody of it. But there's a part towards the end where basically Doug, you know, nostalgia critic, he gets a call from this guy, Sam Fenna. Sam Fenna is actually an animator on YouTube who has this thing called Satellite City.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw, because basically what happens is that the last part of it, when they do the portion for, okay, if you've listened to the album and seen the movie, you remember the portion of it that's called the trial.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's like the sort of animated version where there's like a giant ass and scrotum that acts like a judge. And, you know, there's like the symbolic interpretations of like his teacher, his girlfriend, and his mother. Well, basically, they replaced all those characters with characters from Satellite City.
Hmm.
And it is fucking bonkers looking. And I was like, okay, I need to know what this is because I love it and I want more of it. And so I went to Finn's channel and started watching Satellite City. And damn, if it's not good, like really good. Like, really, really good. Like, so good, this is the type of shit they need to put on Netflix good.
That's high praise.
Yeah. And no, I did not misspell it. That additional L in the title is needed. Basically, there's also, like, a lore website that goes along with it, but it's one of those things where, like, all the great series online, it's an example of emergent storytelling where it starts off with like a really goofy premise and then kind of grows from there. And yeah, just watch it and you'll see. But other than that, still reading books as usual. Oh yeah, and for a couple of days the world was temporarily not made of lava.
Yeah, I actually got can.
I actually got to go outside and walk in the park. It was actually pleasant.
Yeah.
I actually enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then by tomorrow, it's going to be stifling again, and I'm not going to be able to come out of the house for another week. So.
Joy.
Yes, joy, 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 joy down in my heart. But anyway. So, that's it. Anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
No. All right, well then, now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And so, quick question, anybody who's been paying attention to the news, have you been hearing news about another global recession coming right around the corner?
Yes. Yeah, I may have heard a few mentions of that, yes.
Because it's kind of unavoidable, isn't it?
Well, yeah, we had that, whatever that earmark is, and within 18 months it always follows.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So recessions are, well, fucked. Yeah. You know, they suck. Now, obviously, the recession is not the worst thing that can happen, because there's another thing that's even worse that can happen with than a recession, and that's a depression.
Right.
Now, fortunately, the last depression that we had was well over 80 years ago. Thank goodness. We have not had another depression since then.
Yeah.
Yeah. But well, that was, I think, the Great Depression, so you can't, I don't really know, you wouldn't want to go much worse than that.
Yeah. But the thing is about the Great Depression is, what made the Great Depression is only was made possible because of a group of things happening that kind of could have only happened at the time they did. And so, this time for Brandon's Random Factoid, I thought I'd tell you about the eight things that caused the Great Depression.
Okay.
Now, so, and here's the thing. You'll always want to pay attention to these, because usually when one of two or three of these things are happening at a time, it usually greatly increases the possibility that a recession is actually coming. But when you get all eight, that's usually what causes a depression. All right, so the first thing you need to know is World War I, all right? World War One came, and then it ended. It was a great war. So great that we were never going to need a sequel, and nothing bad had ever happened again. Never.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first big thing that helped cause the Great Depression was tight monetary policy. Basically, Fed didn't want to screw with the interest rates, and they ended up fucking themselves over even worse than if they had.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes you need to lower the interest rates, sometimes you need to increase them.
Mm-hmm.
And doing one or the other can cause a bad thing. Doing neither can cause everything to fucking fall apart. So, you know, hint, hint, hint. Okay, number two, corruption in the banking system. See, there's a reason we have rules against insider trading now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason is, if speculation increases too much, if too much people, then basically the whole system falls apart.
Hmm.
If everybody's not playing on a fair set of rules, it basically makes the whole thing, it basically makes people lose confidence in the market and the market collapses.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Number three, bank failures. Yeah, so once people started getting news that shit was going to hit the fan, everybody made a run on the bank. Do you know what a run on the bank is?
Oh, yeah, you go
and
when
you everybody gets to the bank and says, yo, I'm withdrawing all of my funds. Give me my money, please.
Hmm.
And now normally, if just in normal times, that doesn't you know, that happens occasionally, but it's not a big deal. But when everybody fucking takes a run on the bank, well, the banks run out of all the money that they used to actually, you know, run as a bank, and they fall apart. You guys may remember the last big recession in 2008,
mm-hmm.
the global recession.
Yeah.
One of the reasons it didn't really fall into a depression was because they learned this third lesson the first time around.
Mm.
And they were willing to invest billions of dollars into the big banks so that the banks wouldn't fail.
Mm.
They had to be too big to fail. And, of course, not a single one of those motherfuckers learned their lesson, and now we're back around again.
Mm-hmm.
Word.
Yeah. Number four, and this is a big one because occasionally you'll still get assholes who talk about this. Adherence to the gold standard. Any of you got gold bugs in your family?
No.
Nah, I think if we did, they're all dead now.
yeah, so there's a part of American economics that basically views the gold standard with a kind of almost religious fervor.
Yep.
You'll use you'll hear phrases like sound money or hard money. The problem is that gold is finite.
Mm-hmm.
Like really finite. And when everybody decides that, you know, gold is the hard money that they all need to use, well, basically everybody ran the bank and decided to then take their funds and trade it in for gold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know about you, but you can't go to the 7-Eleven and buy a bag of chips and a quart of milk with a gold brick.
It's real damn hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Even gold coins are a bit more trouble than they're worth. Also, gold is only a thing because we think it is.
Uh-huh.
That's the thing.
It's a human concept for sure.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Gold does have genuine uses. You know, especially, you know, like if you're in the tech business, gold definitely has its uses.
Yeah.
But that's about the extent of it. Everything else is purely cosmetic in nature. Yeah, and that's why, you know, we eventually decided to trade it for paper money, fiat currency.
Mm-hmm. Which is where we are now.
Yeah. And fiat currency, despite its issues, is definitely better to be on than the gold standard. But anyway, number four, debt.
What was that?
Debt.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Very, very big debt. And that debt, especially, you know what portion of the population debt hit especially hard?
Mm-hmm.
Flyover country.
Oh.
The farmers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, after World War I had ended, amongst other things, the food exports basically declined dramatically. Because suddenly, you know, American farmers, they didn't need to, you know, send all their food over to the boys overseas and their allies.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically meant that a bunch of farmers suddenly had a bunch of leftover crops that they had no idea what to do with.
Mm.
So a bunch of them just rotted.
Unfortunately.
And in order to stay afloat, a bunch of people took out loans and then defaulted on those loans.
Yeah.
Right. Number five. Well, no, that was number five. Number six. And this is the big one. The big one. The one that everybody needs to fucking pay attention to, even though so many people do not take it seriously, but they absolutely fucking need to. Are you ready for it? Starts with an I, ends with a Y. Two words. Income inequality.
Yeah.
After the Roaring Twenties, the gap between the rich and poor exploded in size. We often call it the Roaring Twenties because we have this popular idea of, like, dudes in, like, you know, speakeasies doing the Charleston with jazz and champagne and rum flowing freely, if illegally. Yeah, that was mostly the middle and upper classes. For the average worker, it kind of sucked already.
Yeah,
and then it got worse. Because once the market actually crashed, basically all the wealthier people were okay because, you know, they had managed to store away their excess wealth in other places for a rainy day. But any person who's ever had to live paycheck to paycheck will tell you it's nearly impossible to actually store and save your money because you need so much of it for just regular everyday necessities.
Mm-hmm.
And then the little bit that you do save up will usually vanish at the point when you have a sudden emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Say you end up breaking your leg and going into debt in the hospital, which is something that happens an awful lot here in the U.S.
Yeah.
It also used to happen a lot in Canada, too, which is why they eventually got their wonderful socialized medicine system.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was experiences in the Rust Belt during the Dust Bowl that the Reverend Tommy Douglas basically used to encourage people in Canada to start his socialized medicine system.
Mm.
Yep. Next up. Reason number seven, leverage. This one needs a little bit of explaining. The big investors at the time were using margins, margin to increase exposure in stocks, even going about as high as 10 to 1. But what happened is that once the stocks began to drop, all those investors had to start delivering more money to cover up the margin call, or at worst, they were forced to sell. And basically everyone started selling. Which caused the stock prices to drop even more, which meant that more people lost confidence in the market, you know, the ones that could afford to use it, and the ones who couldn't even afford to buy stocks or bonds to begin with, well, they had fucking nothing to do. So, and finally, the last big one, the other big one that is usually involving, you know, a good idea that there's a recession coming. And one that we're currently seeing right now, and let's be honest, this one's kind of self-inflicted. Trade imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the thing about what caused the Great Depression, and ultimately the thing that also kind of funded the Roaring Twenties, was the vicious cycle. Okay, so you see, after World War I, we had the Treaty of Versailles. And what's one of the big things about the Treaty of Versailles that everyone remembers? The enormous fucking penalties that were given to Germany.
Yeah.
It's kind of the reason why World War II started. but the thing is, even though that was the case, Germany was still a major manufacturer. And so what happened is, you know, they still had to, you know, have an economy, but they also had this massive war debt that they had to pay off. So they would export all their stuff. That stuff would then make money, which would then go to the Swiss, which of course is part of one of the big banking systems. That money would then, the Swiss would then use, would then go to the U.S., and then the U.S. would then use that stuff to buy exports from Germany. And it circled around and around and around till the point came when Germany finally couldn't do it anymore and the whole fucking thing collapsed. Now, everything got bad. That was bad. Those were the eight things that helped cause the Great Depression. But the thing is, even with that stuff alone, it's possible the Great Depression wouldn't have been as bad as it was if it weren't for the fact that President Herbert Hoover was a fucking knob. So, basically what happened is, under his administration, banks kept failing. The Federal Reserve and the RFC simply could not make enough loans. And the ones they did just sat in the bank as reserves, which meant, you know, there was no way of curbing inflation. And then there was the Smoot-Hawley tariffs. Because here's the thing. Conventional wisdom at the time was that to spur domestic business, you had to implement protectionist policies. Sound fucking familiar?
Yes, it does.
Guess how that worked out?
Badly.
About how we figure it we're going to work out this time.
Maintaining a pro-cyclical policy of fiscal conservatism. Mm-hmm. Now, this wasn't quite the kind of, like, trickle-down bullshit that we have today. It was kind of close. And can you guess how that worked out?
We had a World War II, and Yeah.
See, basically, you know the reason why they were so hardcore on that? Because they were budget hawks. They wanted to keep the budget balanced.
Forest for the trees, something like that.
Yeah. And then finally, like I said, international markets and the collapse of the international money go-around. Like I said, Germany owed reparations to the British and the French. The British and the French owed war debts to the U.S. The U.S. loaned to Germany. Then, the stocks tanked in 29. The financial contagion quickly spread out to the global market. Germany was hit extremely hard. And we all know how that ended.
Lovely.
Yeah, and then from 1929 on, U.S. lenders also began to put the squeeze on Germany. In addition, Heinrich Brüning, the Chancellor of Germany, continuously attempted to buck payment of reparations, which is understandable, but also kind of Sisyphean, because he was going to have to pay that shit eventually. It doesn't matter how much you dodge your creditors, they will find you eventually.
Yeah.
And then finally, Herbert Hoover actually called a moratorium on the reparations. But then, by that time, the U.S. credit was withdrawing from Germany. The reparation payments were no longer going to Britain and France. The flow of cash stopped. That only compounded the collapse of international trade, and then, boom. And that's how we got the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, if you've paid attention to anything I've just been talking about, you'll notice that a lot of this shit seems awfully, awfully familiar in ways that are almost make you want to pull your hair out and scream, did you people learn nothing?
No, they did not.
There was basically only one country on Earth that actually managed to get through the Great Depression otherwise unscathed. Know what country that was?
Switzerland?
No. Nope, Switzerland was hit just as hard. A little country over in Eurasia called the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. Soviet Union was literally the only country in the world that was not affected by the Great Depression. Unfortunately, that was also during the time when they were being led by a Georgian individual by the name of Joseph Stalin.
Yeah, that has its own issues.
And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Wow.
See, I brought it full circle.
Nice. Yeah. Dang.
All right. Now, with that out of the way, as always, it's now time to start the show proper. And our first, as always, is the Assholes of the Week. And our Assholes of the Week are anti-vax protesters in California who are protesting the new laws in the state of California that is making it harder to get exemptions from vaccinations, mandatory vaccinations.
For, like, religious reasons.
Yeah, and so they've now gotten to the point where they're now calling themselves the new civil rights movement.
I don't think that's how that works.
It's not how it works, but these are a bunch of These are a bunch of like suburban middle class
moms.
Yeah.
Soccer moms who
have too much time on their hands.
Too much time on their hands and think they have to have everything.
Yep.
Go their way.
As it says here, a chorus of mostly white women sang a gospel song, "We Shall Overcome," in the California State Capitol. An anthem of the civil rights movement. Mothers rallied outside the governor's office and marched through Capitol corridors chanting, "No segregation, no discrimination, yes on education for all." Some wore t-shirts that said, "Freedom Keepers."
God, I think I just threw up in my mouth.
Yeah, the
anti-vaxxers chanting about education.
Yeah.
I have no words.
And so they have a quote here from Kim Lager Dove, a member of the California Legislative Black Caucus, saying, "This is misappropriation of a movement that really is not over and proves to be challenging to overcome. Yeah. The whole conversation around vaccinations is actually one about privilege and opportunity. It's a personal choice. It's a luxury to be able to have the conversation about medical exemptions, about whether or not you think your child should be vaccinated."
Yep.
That's right, Kitty.
She disapproves.
Yeah.
She's like, "I'm vaccinated, bitches. Why aren't you?"
I pissed out a blood clot and I survived.
Right?
Yeah. This is a group that is particularly annoying because there's nothing more infuriating than confident stupidity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the big problem here is that so most Democrats, you know, do not like these people, do not support anything they're pushing for,
mm-hmm.
which means the enemy of their enemy becomes the GOP's friend.
Hmm.
And you end up seeing Republicans supporting these people.
Yeah, I have noticed an unusual jump in anti-vaxxer rhetoric from the right lately.
Oh, yeah. Well, Trump was doing it during his campaign.
Yeah.
But it's the anti-vax community is split between extremely religious and extremely granola.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting that you know, it's like a Venn diagram.
Mm-hmm.
And that it intersects there because they're generally
otherwise, neither one of them would see eye to eye on anything.
At all, except maybe, you know, being preppers or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is also something that they are prone to.
Mm-hmm. Usually it's either like old, like, you know, Berkeley trust fund families or, you know, like Christian Scientists or Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah. There is a significant portion of my social group that are anti-vax.
Well, yeah, but you live in Chicago.
I do. And some of these people also get upset about, I'm telling you, there's a reach here. They get upset about the smart meters on the side of their home for their electricity.
Mm-hmm.
To the point of getting arrested by the cops by trying to keep people from coming, the utility people from coming and installing them.
Yeah.
Because they think that it's going to give them brain cancer or some shit like that, but yet they're talking on their cell phone while they're doing
it.
And I'm going to stop now because I really sidetracked this conversation.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. There's an interesting part of this article I was reading. So State Senator Richard Pan, who is a Taiwanese-American doctor who wrote the legislation that they're talking about here, managed to, let's see, one Twitter post included Pan's headshot in a lineup of three other Asian doctors who are pro-vaccine with the phrase, "Authoritarians Unite." Notice anything else about them, the post read,
That
they're Asian. And so who's one of the most famous anti-vaxxers out there?
Jenny McCarthy.
Male side, let's say.
Jim Carrey?
Yeah.
No, used to be on a prominent show we'll be talking about in a little bit. A show on NBC that airs on one day of the one night a week.
Alex Trebek?
No.
That's
no.
SNL.
Mm. Oh. Anyway, just.
Rob Schneider.
Don't.
Oh, God, that's right. He is.
Yeah. Yes.
So he jumped onto this whole thing and wrote, "My congratulations to the People's Republic of China Fornia Chairman Mao Jr."
Oh, God.
I can name him Mao Zedong.
Yeah. Okay, first of all, again, he's Taiwanese. Mm.
Same difference, as they say.
Yeah.
The only decent thing to come out of Rob Schneider since, like, 1995 is his daughter.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome.
That and the occasional cameos he does with his wife on Game Grumps, but that's neither here nor there.
But yeah, basically, like, California and other states need to be doing more to exclude these people from basic society because they've proven they can't be trusted.
Nope.
To give a damn about anybody but themselves.
It's causing way too much, way too much trouble.
Yeah. We can't trust them to do basic things like taking the general safety of the public into account and getting their kids vaccinated. And guess what? They don't need to be involved in polite society.
Exactly. Now,
resort them to just having to Grubhub all their food.
Even Grubhub will eventually block them. Some of these people, I had a uncomfortable conversation with a dad of all of them who was bitching because the neighbors were bitching that his 6-year-old was walking around outside nude. He's like, well, why can't my kid walk right here in front of my house nude? Because, motherfucker, you live in society.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have to explain that to a grown-ass fucking 35-year-old man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was maybe their backyard to have a point, but, yeah, front yard, like, in public, essentially.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't.
At least if you have, like, fences or whatever.
Your 6-year-old boy walk around naked because he's going to get human trafficked. Come on. What the fuck?
Damn it, Jimmy, this is why you keep getting molested. Jeez. Yeah, but anyway, so to get away from that, thanks for the wonderful image.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we got our heroes of the week, and our first heroes of the week are the climate strikers, because as we speak, both yesterday and today, the climate strike is going on all over the world, millions participating of all ages, sexes, races, and backgrounds. Really not much more you can add to that, except that it's been extremely large number of young kids involved.
Yeah, it was a lot of students in, like, New York that says here 1.1 million students in New York were given the ability to go strike.
Yeah.
Not worry about repercussions from their schools.
Yeah.
I think as long as they got parents' permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the record, I will say there is something ironic about asking for permission for something that is a strike.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I think it's so that they know what the kid is doing. I think But yeah, kind of spurred on by Greta Thunberg, who's a, she's 16 now? Didn't she go to Congress recently?
Yeah.
She just scared the shit out of Republicans.
Yep.
Afraid of a teenage girl from another country. It's like, okay, you guys are in a great spot where you're afraid of a teenage girl.
Yeah.
Because she's right about everything she's saying.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, is there a sign for the Republicans here?
There were lots of signs in these strikes.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people have in the, please won't somebody think of the children. Helen Lovejoy from The Simpsons. There's one that was actually really good. It was a little tiny thing like, please conserve paper.
That's cool.
Which is like the one irony of the signs and the strikes. Like, this is kind of antithetical to the statement you're trying to make. It's using all this paper for it's essentially kind of pointless.
I saw one guy striking with his iPad.
He had the sign on that.
That's one way to do it.
Or he could have gotten like one of those marker boards. Those are also good.
There was one as like the it was described as these doomers zoomers.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, like, kid goths who, like, had a sign like, I might want to die, but the planet doesn't.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And if you think that all these kids did this just because they got a day off from school.
No, they didn't.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be perfectly honest. If I was their age.
I think it would be a motivator part of it.
It'd be part of it. But the majority of, but most of them also did it because they did actually want to do something with their free time. So,
I mean, yeah, if they wanted to leave, they would have just gone home.
Yeah.
Well, like, and
not stayed around.
It's going to be their planet that burns.
Yeah.
To the point where I think right now at this instant in time,
mm-hmm.
we should allow the voting age to go down to 16.
However, I would actually put it as low as 14.
Yeah. I think that my child at 12 could make an informed decision.
Well, yeah, but that's also due to the fact that, you know, our leaders are so cartoonishly buffoonish right now that...
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, it's like that game show, Are You Smarter Than a 12-Year-Old?
They are not. They simply are not.
That wasn't our own other Heroes of the Week, because we got a really big Hero of the Week. State of New Mexico, who stated this week that starting this week, they will be offering free college education to state residents.
Wow.
Yeah, they are, let's see, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham.
Mm-hmm.
Announced her plan this week that would make New York the second state to offer full college tuition to state residents. Let's see. Yeah, it's a program that's going to cover 100% of the undergraduate tuition fees not paid for by federal grants or the Mexico Lottery Scholarship. It's going to benefit about 55,000 new Mexico students at all 29 public higher education institutions in the state. Beginning in the fall of 2020. So I think there are plans for people coming out of high school, as well as for older people to get, I think, two-year degrees.
Okay.
So, yeah. Some good ways to kind of get people into the education at cheaper options.
Yep.
Which hopefully becomes the norm, because I would definitely consider doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically in some of the disciplines I would like to get into. Hmm. But yeah. At least the second state to do some smart stuff here.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. And, you know, hopefully this spreads and it works out well because, yeah. You know, unfortunately with some stuff, that's kind of how you have to do it.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it state by state until eventually everyone else in the country realizes that
they really should have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like one of the things is New Mexico has one of the worst economies in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's kind of a way to kind of get people better educated to hopefully get people in better jobs and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, good on New Mexico.
Yeah, right.
All right, so now it's time for the proper show proper, and unfortunately we are saying goodbye to Rick Ocasek, who passed away this week at the age of 70. Rick Ocasek was... Oh, 75. Okay. Yeah. They said 70 on the radio. They're a bunch of dumbasses. Rick Ocasek was the lead singer for The Cars. Now, The Cars are, as a band, were sort of at that sort of mid-tier, that kind of bridge of the gap in the early 80s between AOR and New Wave.
Yeah.
So, you know, in 1981, when you want to see what the rock scene looked like, it was, you know what it was. It was Journey. It was...
Ugh. Sorry. That is a visceral reaction. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. You're going to have to die for that now. You know no. that, right?
No, you're on a podcast with two massive Journey fans.
I know, but I fucking hate Journey.
So there's there was Journey, there was Styx,
Speedwagon,
Kansas, yeah. Foreigner.
Yeah, you know the type.
Yeah, and you know stuff like that. That was basically what the rock scene in the early 80s was. And then, of course, once music television came along, that whole thing just went like Yeah, we like to think. I mean, yeah, almost overnight. We like to talk about how Nirvana basically killed hair metal, or MTV basically killed AOR. Well, I mean, I say they killed AOR. Some AOR bands still managed to stick around. It's just that they kind of adapted to the synth-heavy music that was coming out of, you know, the stuff you saw on MTV. And the Cars are very much a part of that. Cars are kind of like... So, okay. New Wave, for example. Like, when you think New Wave, you know what New Wave is, right? Mm. Like, you have an image in your head.
Yeah.
Flock of Seagulls, Duran Duran, Devo. You know, Blondie, The Pretenders, you know, that kind of thing. Stuff that, you know, Adam and the Ants, stuff that has, like, sort of its origins in parts of what the punk rock scene was, you know, because Blondie and Talking Heads both played, you know, with the Ramones at CBGB's. So, mm-hmm. you know, they're part of that. The Cars are kind of like what would happen if you took a bar rock band and then took a new wave band and put them together.
Yeah, they kind of straddled it a decent bit. They weren't doing the crazy big arena ballads like Journey did all the time.
Yeah, so a really good example of this would be that song "You're Just What I Needed."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it's got that big like you know guitar riff on it. Down, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also that sort of siren-y sounding synthesizer in the background that goes with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is like very new wavy. And then there's like the delivery, which is very kind of punkish, I don't care type.
Yeah.
So that was basically. You know, and that's how they started, at least. By the time the mid-80s came around, they had fully embraced the new wave stuff, because you had songs like, what's it called? You Might Think I'm Crazy?
Yeah, You Might Think.
You Might Think, yeah, that's absolutely an early 80s new wave song, full on. Mm. There's barely any guitar in it. It's mostly synthesizer and electronic drums. Mm. Now, they did have, like, the big sweeping ballads, like, Who's Gonna, like, Drive, which is...
Yeah.
So, Rick Ocasek didn't actually sing that song. That was, I can't remember if it was the keyboard player or the drummer. He passed away in 1999, I think. they are very, very emblematic of a very short but very important time in pop music. Again, like I said, that sort of weird bridge between AOR and New Wave, because by the time 1984 came around, you know, the poofy hair New Wave stuff was all the rage, basically. Because suddenly, you know, and the Cars were very much a part of all of that forming. And, you know, Rick Ocasek, he left a hell of a legacy, so... And the cool thing was is that when they started making more modern albums, when they started making more recent albums, they didn't change a damn bit.
Wow.
Like, yeah, the most recent stuff could have literally come out of like 1983.
You know, I noticed there was another band that came a lot after the Cars that did that. Bon Jovi did that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it would have been fine in, 1988.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was also, you know, that song It's My Life, which was a massive hit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that song, that was basically their massive late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, kind of brought them back.
Yeah.
Yeah. then they made a country western album.
No, they didn't.
They did.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, I don't admit to listening to Bon Jovi anymore, so.
Yeah, it was, what was it called? I think it was called Lost Highway.
You know, though, they had some stuff back in the late 80s that did sound a little country-ish.
From like that, there. From the New Jersey album?
From Slippery When Wet. It was the,
Yeah, but that's more of like a cowboy type song.
Well,
full like country type stuff would come with New Jersey. But yeah, you're right. So anyway, R.I.P. Frickle Kasich. Your music is awesome. Now, onward to the news. Alex Trebek recently announced that he's doing another round of chemotherapy. Everyone knows that he has
pancreatic cancer.
Pancreatic cancer. That's right.
Yeah.
Basically says in the video, like they thought that he had kind of gotten over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
But then things kind of went south again.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it.
Cancer sucks.
It does.
And just when you think it's beaten down, when you've beaten it, it comes right back.
Yeah.
It can.
Yep. It's like, it's one of those things that, you know, we have some pretty remarkable medical technology, and yet we still haven't figured this out yet. So, you know.
Ugh. Yeah, there's just hundreds of types of cancer.
Yep.
It all work differently.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope that, there can be something good that comes out of this with Alex Trebek.
Yeah. Well, at least he's actually, getting medical attention, unlike
Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Well, no, because didn't Steve Jobs basically start using holistic New Age medicine to try and treat his cancer?
At first.
I don't know how that worked out.
At first. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, he went to modern medicine, but by that time it was
too late.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, next up, Colt, of course, famous gun maker, have announced that they are suspending production of AR-15s for the civilian market because there's just too damn many of them.
Yep. So not really any moral obligation or anything like that.
Yeah.
But they just say that there's just too many out there, so that it's kind of pointless to keep making them.
Yeah. Probably too many out there and not enough people buying them.
Probably.
Yeah, and I think there's also a bunch of, clones out there as well.
Yeah,
that's probably true. But yeah.
So it just kind of leads to there being a glut in the market. It's like they say that basically there's enough out there for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Is a little concerning in and of itself.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
Like, okay, so then where the hell are all of these AR-15s then? They're floating around on the streets of Chicago.
Yeah.
I need to say something about that. Everybody kind of gets down on Chicago because of their gun control laws and basically point at Chicago and say, see? There's a murders every day in Chicago. That shows that gun control doesn't work. But Chicago is kind of an island in a sea of dumbasses. And, there's nothing preventing anyone from going out of the city and getting a gun and then coming back into Chicago.
No.
And I don't think people understand how easy it is to get out of the city into the suburbs. You literally walk across a street and you're in the suburbs.
Yeah.
And
now you have different
you can
laws.
Buy a gun. Yeah. Yeah. Or you could get in your car and drive over to Indiana, which, from the south side of Chicago is like, what, a half hour in heavy traffic?
Yeah.
A half hour is far long to drive in order to go get a gun.
Yeah.
It's we don't have walls around the city limits of Chicago.
No.
It's insanely easy. People can take a train for $5.50 and come to the suburbs and buy a gun.
Mm-hmm. Just wait for one of those ubiquitous gun shows and go get a gun there.
God.
That's
how and there are a ton of people in the suburbs with hard-ons for their guns.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary because you just don't know what kids have access to guns.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, next story. We now know who the new national security advisor it is. Obviously, John Bolton either quit and or was fired. We now know who his replacement is. It's Robert C. O'Brien. Robert C. O'Brien is I think he was heavily involved in diplomacy. He helped.
Yeah, like a hostage negotiation.
Yeah, a guy who went to try and get Americans out of jail in foreign country.
Yeah. Particularly known for the ASAP Rocky situation in, what was that, Sweden?
Yep. He's the guy that got ASAP Rocky out of prison.
Mm.
Yeah, which means he's perfect for national security advisor.
Okay, I mean, to be fair, that's not the only thing he's done. He's managed to get people out of, like, North Korea and Syria.
Yeah.
So he does have, like, experience in foreign affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't trust people that have to put their middle initial in their names.
Yeah, me neither.
It's like, Bobby O, you're not that important.
Yeah. Basically, he got the job because he kind of, well, missed his
ass. He was
in
Trump's mind recently.
Yeah. And that's basically good enough.
Yeah. I guess he was, say here, he was foreign policy advisor to Mitt Romney during his 2012 presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
As well as for former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and Ted Cruz. So there's the trio of shit right there on your resume. Let's see. He has extensive experience in national security and diplomacy, working under Condoleezza Rice. Hillary Clinton is co-chairman of the State Department's public-private partnership for justice reform in Afghanistan. The partnership focused on training Afghan judges, prosecutors, and defense lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
He was appointed by George W. Bush's U.S. representative to the U.N. General Assembly in 2005, where he worked with John Bolton.
Yep.
And also, he gets the thumbs up from Lindsey Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Says he understands the world for the dangerous place it is. He's got great negotiating skills as our hostage negotiator, and I think he'll be a very sound policy advisor to the president. And of course, Ted Cruz had to chime in.
Mm-hmm.
I am confident he will advance our national security during this time of heightened global tension. Enemies like Iran and rivals such as Russia and China are challenging us with new dangers. I look forward to working with him in confronting those dangers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll point out that the heightened global tension is your damn fault.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And basically, let's make it seem like we're going to get into war with Iran over this oil stuff with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, sure, I guess that's textbook GOP strategy.
Yeah.
They're going after the oil. We got to fight for it. It's not like we don't have tons of oil of our own.
Mm.
We're the number one producer of oil in the world.
Yeah.
We're here mostly self-sustained on that stuff. And also, this would be a good time to just start making strides to get over to electricity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As far as like cars and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Solar power and all that.
Yeah.
Like maybe don't rely on something that's so easily destroyed.
Yeah.
Like oil.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, at least he's not a massive warmonger, so... There is that.
Not yet.
Mm.
Not yet.
We don't know enough about him.
Yeah. Kind of a wild card at this point.
Might just be a yes man.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, next up on the Trump dump. The Manhattan District Attorney recently subpoenaed 8 years of Trump's tax returns.
Oh, boy. Yep.
From Messers USA.
Mm-hmm.
Long-time accounting firm for Trump and the Trump Organization.
Mm. Yep.
Part of its investigation on hush money payments. Yeah.
And this is state, not federal taxes.
Yeah.
Which means there's not a damn thing he can do about it.
Nope. Yeah. So.
That's going to be fun to see.
Yeah. Yep. I don't expect to be surprised by anything I find there, to be honest.
No. Just mostly confirmation and regret.
Of that we already knew.
Mm-hmm.
It was a massive crook.
But anyway. And finally, on the Trumped Up, just to be a dick, the Trump administration has withdrawn California's ability to have stricter emission standards than the federal limit.
Oh, yeah. The party of the states' rights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Moving to limit the states' rights.
Yeah.
Now, technically, as the federal government does have jurisdiction over things that may affect interstate commerce.
Yeah.
And technically, they could kind of harangue a case that the stricter emission standards could pose a problem for that. But it's mostly just them being dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, much. As Trump tweeted out, let's see, where is it at here? Let's see, there will be very little difference in emissions between the California standard and the new U.S. standard, but the cars will be far safer and much less expensive. Bullshit. Many more cars will be produced under the new and uniform standard, meaning significantly more jobs. Nope. Automakers should seize the opportunity because without his alternative to California, you'll be out of business. Yeah, no.
Mm-hmm.
We need Kevin Nealon to be reading this stuff and just pointing out the bullshit in each line.
Please, could we?
I'm surprised, like, John Oliver, one of those guys, hasn't done that already.
Yeah.
John Oliver's recent thing is doing Dr. Seuss lines about how much he hates Ted Cruz, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
I do not like that man. He does a lot of good stuff with that.
Yeah.
Even shits on him in his facial hair.
I just find it remarkable that the Trump administration is basically saying, yeah, you know, better standards. Yeah, we don't want to be better. We're okay with being mediocre.
Yeah.
Is that a good precedent to set?
Make America mediocre again?
Yeah. Well, you got a pretty snappy slogan there, because then it's mama.
Okay, I got one here. I do not like that man Ted Cruz. I do not like his far-right views. I do not like his stupid chin. I do not like his smarmy grin. I do not like him with a beard. I do not like him freshly sheared. I do not like Ted Cruz at all. That man Ted Cruz can suck my balls.
Nice.
I guess, yeah. Let's see if I can find some more. I do not like that man, Ted Cruz. I do not like him in the news. I don't like what he just said. I do not like his boxy head. I do not like him wearing glasses. I do not like him kissing asses. I wish he'd never get one vote. That man, Ted Cruz, can lick my scrot.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, next up. Oh, boy. This one caused a bit of a stir online this week. Sandy Hook Promise released a back to school ad on the new normal, and it is pretty fucking harrowing.
So how did it go?
Yeah.
This was not the week for me to watch that.
It starts like a back to school, like, hey, you need a new backpack?
Mm-hmm.
How about some folders?
New folders, new shoes, socks.
And then it's
but what happens is that, it starts slowly morphing. And then as you're paying attention to the background, you start to realize something's off. And then when the
kid's like talking about shoes, he's running, as other kids are getting shot in the background.
Yeah. It's like, my mom got this new skateboard. It's really cool. And he's using it to break the window so he can climb out. There's the kids,
he gets headphones.
Yeah.
Doesn't hear the shooting,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. And then it ends with what was that?
I was going to say, then there's the two kids, one with scissors and one with colored pencils. They're basically, hiding around the door frame to stab the fucker if he comes through.
One girl likes her new sweaters to, tie the doors shut.
Yeah, and one who uses his new sock to, put pressure on a gunshot wound.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And then the last one is a girl basically gets sending a goodbye text to her mom while she's hiding, weeping in the restroom.
Hmm.
As the door opens.
And you can hear the dude walking through.
Hmm. Okay, we gotta stop talking about this week.
Hmm. Yeah.
Please.
That shit got a little too real for Carissa this week.
Yeah, it really did.
And as you can imagine, a lot of people got upset over the fact that this ad existed and not over the fact that a bunch of kids have been getting shot in their schools.
Yeah, this ad is about what the new normal is.
Yeah.
People have to think about buying, book bags with shielding in them.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
So every time I see someone on Twitter posting that shall not be infringed yet, I just post, gonna infringe anyway, fucker. So, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, and guess what? There are amendments. That means they can be changed.
Yeah, that's why we have
25 amendments.
Mm-hmm.
That means things were not great about the original.
Yeah.
yeah. on Constitution.
Right.
Yeah, anyway. Moving on from there. Over in the UK, there was an art exhibit. Amongst that art exhibit, there was a solid gold toilet.
Yep.
And it got stolen.
Yeah, so I think we've talked about this toilet before when it was initially installed in an art exhibit, I think, in the U.S. at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It's called America, the exhibit.
Yeah.
It's a working toilet that is installed with you know, water line and all that. People are encouraged to use it. And yeah, it was installed in the 18th century stately home, World Heritage Site. It's the birthplace of Sir Winston Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is that security side, we don't have to really worry about security about this toilet. So it got mm-hmm. stolen like within the first week. As I said, it's not going to be the easiest thing to nick.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of one of the best things about it. It's like, oh, it's installed. You can't take it out easily. Somebody figured it out. Which meant like there was a water line just blasting water around that place. It's like, yeah, they got wet and they got away. They arrested an old man but didn't recover the toilet. So the toilet's still hidden somewhere.
Have you checked Boris Johnson's house?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Mm.
But yeah, there's a golden throne lost in the UK.
That's hilarious, actually.
Yeah, that's wow. Speaking of wow, there's a wearable Lex chair that exists now, and I now fear for humanity.
Wait,
you gotta watch the video.
Yeah,
there's a video that Tech Insider does.
What the F is that shit?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a wearable chair that kind of looks like you have like straps onto your butt with this like metal stuff that kind of sits down like legs of a kind of like legs of a chair, I guess, so you can kind of sit wherever. Which has some actual uses, like people have disabilities that prevent them from standing for long periods of time.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's definitely something that'd be useful for them. I saw some guys like cameramen. It's like, oh, this would be really nice to have, like a place to kind of sit in, like a steady place to get shots, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, for a photographer on a long shoot, that's helpful.
Yeah,
it's not something you like want to wear every day, but.
We're humans. We can do the Asian squat.
Or we could just, you know, find a chair.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there is none. But I mean, even if you're doing the Asian squat, you're putting a good deal of pressure on your lower legs.
Yeah, and your knees.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not really, because your ass goes below it.
Still.
Yeah. Well, as long sometimes as you don't fall back.
Elevated. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look at this guy sitting there. He's he's sitting.
See, the reason, the thing about this is I can totally see like Amazon or God forbid Walmart like giving these out to their employees and saying, hey, you can use these now so you can sit down so it doesn't put off as much pressure on your legs. Also, you don't have a lunch break anymore.
Yeah.
And don't mind the clanking as everybody walks around.
Yeah, so they had a Kickstarter campaign that happened, let's see, I don't know when. I don't think they list that anymore in Kickstarter.
No.
Campaigns, not easily, at least. But the Kickstarter exclusive tier for the pair was $338.
$338 for...
Yeah, it's made in Singapore.
I mean, it looks really warm. They're going to get swamp ass wearing that thing in the summer.
Seriously.
Yeah, like, one of the problems with the video is, like, the guy gets on the bus and it's like, okay, how are you going to solve this problem?
Yeah.
Unless you're just standing on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing. It was like, all right, what if you got a bathroom emergency? You gotta get that thing off. Yeah, like, there's definitely some situations like, yeah, if you're that kind of person that's got to worry about that, it's probably not going to be for you.
Mm-hmm.
There are definitely situations where it actually be pretty useful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just one of those weird things that kind of showed up on the internet and caused a lot of people to freak out.
Yeah. This is definitely one of those Silicon Valley things.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which I'm now starting. Yeah, which I'm now starting to think that it might be a good idea if the government started using Silicon Valley for test bombing.
Stop! Oh my god. No.
I would wholeheartedly recommend everybody watch the HBO series Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Because it is amazingly hilarious.
Yeah.
Because they rip the shit out of that place.
Oh, yes, they do.
It's so great.
Because it fucking deserves it.
Yeah.
But anyway. All right, so next up, KFC has entered the chicken sandwich debate. Because as we all know, after Popeyes introduced their chicken sandwich and basically ran out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, there's just no more chicken sandwiches.
Mm.
They're just gone.
I think at a certain point they were selling the chicken to put your own buns in there.
KFC came up with the idea. You know, so KFC already has greatly teetered on the edge of what constitutes as a sandwich with the KFC Double Down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You remember the KFC Double Down, don't you?
Vaguely. Yeah.
Chicken sandwich with chicken for buns.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
2 pieces of chicken for buns between bacon and cheese. And I think ham.
Okay, that's like a club sandwich with no bread.
Yeah, pretty much. So they came up with the idea, hey, we're going to top all of you motherfuckers, and we're going to give you the chicken and donut sandwich, which is a piece of chicken with 2 donuts as bread.
Yeah, glazed donuts.
So basically, it's the chicken version of the Luther burger.
Yeah, do you want diabetes? Because this is how you get diabetes.
I mean, KFC, that's a good market for them, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're testing this out, I think in like Northern Virginia, and I forget what the other one is, Pittsburgh.
Hmm.
Yeah, Norfolk and Richmond, Virginia, and Pittsburgh. Let's see, starting the 16th, so it's already out there. You get a chicken and donut basket meal for $5.49, which includes chicken tenders or bone chicken plus a donut, or a chicken sandwich for $5.99, featuring a fried chicken patty between 2 donut buns.
Fried chicken? They didn't do the grilled chicken? Come on, nobody expected them to do the grilled chicken.
Yeah, said nobody ever.
Yeah, the technical name of this is the Kentucky Fried Chicken and Donuts sandwich.
You know, this doesn't sound horrifying to me.
It doesn't, but man, somebody's going to be...
Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah, the chicken and donuts, you get kind of a little sweet and sour thing going.
Yeah.
It might actually be pretty decent.
Yeah, so then why don't they just put sweet and sour on the chicken instead of just throwing in the donuts?
Because that would factor. Cost as much.
And that would make sense, apparently. Obviously, if you're like a teenager or you're in your 20s, you could eat one of these, no problem.
Hmm.
You start getting our ages.
Yeah, we'll probably.
It gets a little harder.
Yeah.
It gets a little harder.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Just a smidgen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they kind of entered this whole chicken sandwich debate earlier this summer with one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen, the Cheetos chicken sandwich.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Which looks like, I don't know, Cheetos just masturbate all over chicken.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm.
It's just like this nasty looking sauce, and I guess some Cheetos in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this looks like somebody that had like 3 things in their fridge and on their cupboard. It's like, I gotta make a sandwich out of this.
And one of those things was weed.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, but that would only be legal in Colorado, so... Mm. In California.
Mm-hmm. But, anyway, so, yeah, in more news of the gross novelty food, Pizza Hut debuted their stuffed Cheez-It pizza.
Yeah, this is weird, so... I got this yesterday because I just had to try it out and see what the hell this is.
Mm-hmm.
It's $6.49 for like 4 little squares of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's meant more as like an entree kind of thing, snack like thing, side thing, I guess. But I just got that because, like, this is $6.49. I'm not fucking getting this and, like, some pizza or whatever. So, yeah, first thing, like, when I got it, they were a little bit burnt on the edges. So I was like, oh, this is going to be crispy. It was, like, really soft, actually.
Hmm.
Like, it was really weird. But it tastes just like Cheez-Its.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just with, like, cheese in the middle.
Mm.
Like a nice layer of cheese. Kind of like the pizzone a little bit. Mm. Kind of thing. There's also a version that has, like, little pepperoni bits in there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I got, which is fine.
Mm.
But yeah, it's, like, really salty and sharp cheddar.
It basically, tasty. It kind of looks like baked ravioli.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it comes with some marinara sauce, and you can dip it in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty decent.
Yeah, doesn't look bad to me.
Yeah.
I like Cheez-Its, too, so.
Yeah.
It's just weird that they call it pizza, which it's not.
Hmm.
It's fucking cheese with Cheez-It dough.
Yeah.
Around it.
Yeah.
And I have a little, like, extra food news.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of food-related. So, I don't know if you guys heard that one of the largest and most popular malls, and really the only truly thriving indoor mall that I can think of in my area, yesterday somebody slammed their SUV into it and started driving through the goddamn mall. I guess he really wanted to go to Rainforest Cafe, but he completely missed the food court. And
wow.
Ended up going, yeah, it was actually a pretty bad scene. You know, people were picking up their kids and running out and screaming and crying in hysterics. And at first I thought, well, was this a confused 84-year-old man who, you know, just kind of happened to drive to the fucking mall? But no, it was a 22-year-old guy.
So, it was a man on a mission from God.
Right? Yeah. He really wanted to get in there to Stan's Donuts.
Mm.
But unfortunately, that was on a second level, and he couldn't get up the escalator.
Use your own damn feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? It's not a private mall.
Mm.
Yeah. Seriously.
Not that kind of mall.
Mm.
No. No, you use the internet now, you shop, and then you just go pick it up.
Yeah.
Like,
All right, next up. SNL hired and then almost immediately fired comedian Shane Gillis because they found some old podcasts of his that were racist as fuck.
I don't know what you define old as, like, within the past year.
Yeah.
What?
This is pretty recent stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah, he has a podcast. What's it called here? Let's see. Gillis Podcast. I don't know what's called. Matt and Shane's Secret Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Gillis and co-host Matt McClusker discussing New York's Chinatown when Gillis says, "Let the effing chinks live there."
Oh, later, fuck that.
He later recalls a restaurant being full of fucking Chinese in there.
Yeah.
And plenty of other people just dug into more episodes and found more shit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nothing ever dies on the internet. And if you're going to say shit like that and then get a big job, people are going to start looking up your older catalog of work.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that older is not that old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not that you would think SNL would do a little bit more due diligence.
Yeah. But
though some of the, let's see, the latest podcast they mentioned here is episode 146. I don't expect them to listen to 146 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does he get racist at all in here? But yeah, he started doing, like, he did, like, his first, like, stand-up thing after this all went down.
Mm-hmm.
And was basically complaining about stuff. Said he's going to go in harder on the racist stuff, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So if you thought two ways to go, he kind of comes to terms with the issues and tries to be better. Or just doubles down, he's doubling down.
Yep.
And he also got some words of encouragement from former cast members, like Rob Schneider.
Damn it.
And Norm MacDonald.
Mm.
Yeah, two people who do not have the greatest reputation post SNL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically like offering apologies for having to live in this PC era and all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, dude's a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Trying to get on a public show like this, expecting nothing to happen. But yeah.
I'm just like flabbergasted that people don't remember Andrew Dice Clay. Because.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Andrew Dice Clay is an example of. He's kind of like the stupid version's idea of like what. What was his name? From the 50s. Famous dirty comedian from the 50s. Like, so much that he got banned from certain states.
Oh, shit.
I'm trying to remember. But, yeah, Andrew Dice Clay, his whole thing was...
being filthy, dirty, and racist.
Yeah, like, his whole... He had this character called the Dice Man, mm-hmm. and he was basically, like, a caricature of, like, the worst aspects of, like, a blue-collar asshole from Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the thing about that is that joke only works so far.
Yeah.
Oh, I think the other guy you were talking about might have been Jackie Mason.
No, I was talking about Lenny Bruce, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The comedians out there.
Yeah. Lenny Bruce was actually who I was thinking. Andrew Dice Clay was the stupid person's idea of who Lenny Bruce was. Problem is, Lenny Bruce was actually not only funny, but he could also take the most horrible offensive stuff and actually bring it around to a good point.
Hmm.
Andrew Dice Clay just said awful shit for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why you don't hear about him anymore.
Well, yeah, and more more recently, I mean, Michael Richards.
Yeah.
Remember him and his stand-up?
Well, he famously... Well, he was never that good of a stand-up to begin with. But he kind of just infamously flamed out that one time and then disappeared. People often talk about Jerry Seinfeld, but people often attribute that whole thing to what Jerry Seinfeld saying is like, you can't go to like college places anymore because they'll get all offended. But he's actually said, no, that's not actually what I said. Mm. And you kind of need to stop attributing that shit to me because you're using it to try and justify some really awful stuff.
Yeah, it's like taste for comedy has changed.
Yeah.
Even over the last like 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you can't be offensive.
Offensive or edgy, but it means you have to have the skills to back it up.
Yeah, you have to do it smart ways.
Yeah. George Carlin was George Carlin.
Yeah.
And that stuff still.
Jane Gillis is not George Carlin.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I got some lines from his stand up he did after this all went down.
Mm-hmm.
He said, everybody's like, you can't say expletive and not expect consequences. I'm fine with the consequences. That's it. I'm not arguing. But I want everyone to know that I've been reading every one of my death threats in an Asian accent.
Okay, fuck this guy.
Yeah. Then I guess he had a bit about how he said, I don't want you to think I'm too pro-Trump. I will say this, of all the presidents I've been alive for, Trump would definitely be the funniest one to see get shot. Like, without a doubt.
Okay,
I'm not asking for that. I don't want that to happen, but it would be funny to see. He'd be on stage talking expletive. The shooter would be coming at him, and he'd be like, sit down. He'd definitely make a funny noise when he got hit. It would be funny.
Okay, now I'm really not so sure anymore.
Yeah.
Because he said that awful racist shit about Asians, and then suddenly he comes around with this, and I'm legit chuckling inside, and now I don't know what to think anymore.
Okay, and then here's the next part. It's funny to hear so many people these days say, I'm not racist. It's like, are you sure? Being racist isn't like a yes or no thing. It's not like you do or you don't have it. Being racist is like being hungry. It's like, yeah, you're not right now, but a cheeseburger cuts you off in traffic, and you can get hungry real quick.
Oh, okay.
Even though you're
now
hungry for that type
guy.
Of cheeseburger, the cheeseburger is not Asian in that joke.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, now I can say again, fuck this guy. Because, like all racist, he immediately thinks that everyone else is just as racist as him, just hiding it.
Yeah.
Thinks there's a racist spectrum.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as a racism spectrum. There is racist and not racist.
Yeah.
There are different kinds of racist.
Mm-hmm.
There are maybe arguably different degrees of racist. Yeah, but like, it's still racist.
Yeah, like direct and indirect mm-hmm. stuff.
Systematic and individual. Yeah.
The things you learn just didn't know exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway.
Ignorance kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up, HBO Max has picked up The Big Bang Theory for its service.
Yeah, and this is supposed to be a huge deal. I think they suggest they heard rumors that it's maybe upwards of $1 billion
mm-hmm.
to get it.
Yeah. It's you know, I'm supposed to be the target audience for this show.
And it completely fucking fails.
I hate it. I hate everything about it. So
my parents love it.
Yeah. It's.
I think it's more for people that are outside of that circle.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's like there was the It crowd, which is so much better done than this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they'll be getting all 279 episodes of it when HBO Max launches next spring.
Yeah. I can keep that.
The deal also includes an extension of cable rerun rights to Big Bang for Warner Media's TBS.
Mm-hmm.
Which has, as I say, has been a big part of their success recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been consistently ranked among cable's top five outlets ever since Big Bang reruns debuted on the cabler since in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they had license fees upwards of $600 million from TBS and local TV stations around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Just from that show, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And now for the part that you're really going to hate. They also picked up the Boondocks revival.
Mm.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that.
It's really good.
Was it? I was afraid it would ruin the original.
Nope. It is hilarious all by itself.
Mm.
It's on my list now.
It's very much like the Chappelle Show in that it's a good commentary on racist.
Mm.
Yeah.
Race relations and all that stuff.
Well, sure, Boondocks. I mean, they were always... Yeah.
Mm.
They
it was a good adaptation of that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Boondocks, I believe, was the last great newspaper comic strip to come into existence in the U.S.
Yeah.
And you know it's the last great comic strip in the U.S. because it doesn't run anymore. because too many people complained about it.
Yeah.
Isn't the Far Side coming back?
It is.
It is. Yeah.
That's going to be neat to see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, this is going to be 24 new episodes, as well as all 55 of the original series. Are going to launch by fall 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the original creator is on board, Aaron McGruder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. What else they say here? The series will follow the adventures of self-proclaimed civil rights legend Robert Granddad Freeman and his rambunctious grandsons Huey and Riley. The family has recently moved to an idyllic community in suburban Maryland, only to see it taken over by the tyrannical Uncle Ruckus.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bizarre neo-fascist regime. Life under Ruckus turns out to be an everyday struggle to survive.
Hmm.
And McGruder is going to be showrunner and executive producer.
Actually going to have like a ongoing story arc instead of just one episode?
Yeah. Seems that way, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, nice. I am all for that.
Yeah. Nice.
It's just weird. HBO has like three streaming services now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they do.
It's
HBO
crazy.
Go now and Max.
Yeah.
And they don't even have the good stuff on Max.
Mm.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Max seems more like the original and back catalog stuff. Now, I think, is the current stuff, and Go as basically a substitute for a cable login.
Yeah.
So.
Some of you who are listening may be a little too young to understand what I'm talking about Cinemax and the good stuff.
Yeah.
Cinemax, you mean?
I'll talk about it
on a Brandon's Random Factoid.
Yeah,
someday.
You got to throw a little Red Shoe Diaries into that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but you'll get it. I'll talk about it.
When you had those
I will educate the childrens.
Mm. Yeah, I want. Do they still have the concept of like the free weekend for like the premium channels?
Yep. Occasionally.
Sometimes they do.
I remember when that would happen and like you and your parents would pull out your VHS tapes, the blank ones.
Everything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's what we used to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. like when HBO would be in that circulation, like, oh yeah, get all the nudie shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Cinemax was basically like, oh, that was a godsend for me when I was a teenager.
Yeah. I remember back in the day when we had, well, cable was just getting started around here. Mm-hmm. They had these, well, the pay TV channels, as they used to call them. They had all the movie channels and stuff. But they weren't sending those scrambled.
No, see, you could actually, like, press the numbers on the box just in a right way so that you could get the porno channels.
Yeah, so eventually.
And then later, there was, like, a chip that you could add to your, you know, as a descrambler.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually, they got that sophisticated, but at the time that I was doing it, it was basically the signal was being sent, but there was no sync signal.
Yeah.
So we built a box to inject the sync into the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was devious back then.
Yeah.
We were analog pirates.
Yes.
Yeah. And now you know why Phil is almost completely blind.
Ah.
Well, I was blind from birth, but I have inhaled a lot of solder smoke, so.
Yeah.
That probably explains something.
Probably didn't help. Yeah.
So anyways.
Anyway. All right. So next up, Seinfeld is coming to Netflix in a new deal.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So as you know, like The Office and Friends are going to be leaving,
mm-hmm.
Going to NBC's streaming service, which will have some more details in a little bit.
Yeah.
They picked up Seinfeld, which seems like is a huge deal for them.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah, they picked up the global exclusive streaming rights for this, for the entire Seinfeld collection, in 2021, mm-hmm. when the deal they have with Hulu expires.
Yeah, so it's still going to be a while before we can watch it.
And it'll be 5 years, and also along with this, it'll be in 4K for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's going to be a good boon for them.
Yeah.
Potentially like a huge deal for, it's like one of those shows that like a lot of shows today, like are owned by the networks that air them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This one is not, there's a lot of hands
in the pot
for this. Like yeah. Sony is like the main one. But yeah, there's a couple others as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I really need to see Seinfeld in 4K. I think I'd be okay with DVD for that show.
Yeah. Also, I mean, okay, so they still show Seinfeld reruns all the time on, like, TV.
Oh, they do.
But obviously a lot of people don't really have cable or satellite television anymore.
No.
They just have these streaming services.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Seinfeld is going to work as well now as it did then. Because the thing about Seinfeld is that pretty much every major, like, popular sitcom that came after it basically mercilessly ripped off from it.
Mm-hmm.
In, like, just about every way possible. Like, everything from, like, Friends to freaking It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It has basically ripped off Seinfeld.
Yeah.
So much so that the stuff that made Seinfeld revolutionary is now pretty cliche for the most part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a good example of a period piece at this point.
Yeah. So
there is that.
Yeah.
You also kind of realize after a couple of seasons that, oh my God, these people are horrible.
Yes.
Well, and they know it too.
Which is why they end up in jail at the end.
Yeah.
They're horrible people, but at the same time, it's like, you know, these are regular folks. They're not, you know,
yeah,
they're not overly privileged. It's just, mm-hmm. just regular folks. If you want overly privileged, you need to watch Succession. Oh my God, that show was amazing.
Yeah,
what's it on?
HBO.
Okay.
Next up, next story: Netflix. Paul Rudd's show Living with Yourself gets a trailer and an October 18th release date.
Hmm.
Yep. Yeah, this is the show that the only way you can top having Paul Rudd in your show is having two Paul Rudds.
Oh.
Yeah, so stars Miles Elliott, a man struggling in life who undergoes a novel spa treatment that promises to make him a better person by messing with his DNA, only to find out, oh, there's a... They cloned him, essentially, to make him a better person.
Oops.
And, yeah, so, like, kind of turns into, like, a Three's Company kind of situation, like, you know, having these two versions of himself, original and he's still
Paul
got a
Rudd
wife.
And better Paul Rudd.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, how is this all going to work out? Sort of thing. And, yeah, it's going to be a series. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Glow is getting its renewed for its fourth and final season.
Yep. That'll be out probably next year.
Yep. By the way, if you're ever interested, so, like, Glow is actually inspired by an actual thing. Obviously, like, the story is mostly fiction.
Yeah.
But Glow was totally an actual thing that existed. And you can actually watch the pilot for it on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's about as ridiculous as the show itself is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cheesy and kitsch as fuck, and it realizes that none of these ladies are actually, like, gifted lifelong wrestlers, so they just sort of take the camp factor and run with it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, there's one good wrestler among them.
Mm.
The woman that teaches them all how to wrestle.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it's kind of about these women who had other ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just fell into that for a steady gig.
Much like the real Glow. Yeah. Most of them were just, you know, models or actresses that were wanting to get that big break.
Yep.
Yeah, and at the end of season three, they kind of set up a new turning point for everybody. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes for their final season.
Yeah.
And it's actually... You see, so four seasons, Glow itself only lasted for like 6 years, so.
Yeah, so it's not bad.
Yeah.
I do like that companies like Netflix and HBO are actually willing to end things and, you know, wrap them up.
Yeah.
Instead of going on and on and on until the shows have lost all meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at you, Simpsons.
And Family Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, though I think for, like, Netflix, like, there's a point of diminishing returns for new seasons of some of these shows.
Yeah.
For them versus, like, constantly having new stuff pumped out that can catch somebody and keep them on for another month.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. But yeah, it's going to be cool to see.
Yeah.
All right. Next up. NBC has revealed their own streaming service, and they're calling it Peacock.
Okay.
Yeah. So the name, for me, immediately brings up the Katy Perry song.
Yeah.
Where she uses as a euphemism for having a guy show her his dick.
Okay.
Yeah, I get the Peacock thing because that's their logo.
Yeah.
But I don't. Like, outside of that, it's not really a great name.
No.
Having cock in your name is not going to be a great... just like there's one, like, a cable provider called Cox.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the one we have, unfortunately.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, that's a good way to get kids to just say Cox. I'm like, no, I'm talking about the cable provider. Yeah.
And then from Friends, the We Hate Cox group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, they are launching this.
Not Friends, Scrubs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, April 2020.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna launch. No other real details. I think they're gonna have a potential way. If you're a cable subscriber, you can get a free version of this.
Mm-hmm.
There'll also be like advertising supported version of this that might be free.
Yeah,
as well as a regular subscription model that might not have advertising. So they're dipping themselves into the Hulu problem. Mm-hmm.
And you know why all of these networks and stuff are doing this, right?
Because regular TV is dying.
Basically, yes.
And Netflix and Hulu and some of these others are doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
They want more of the pie.
Yeah.
For themselves.
And they're going to ruin it, you know?
But cable subscriptions are, you know, have been declining. So, you know, it's these networks got to figure out something else.
And the thing that is to NBC's credit is they have tons of content. Just being a conglomerate that has acquired a lot of networks over the years. They have a lot of stuff. Like, The Office is going to be coming back to them after they're ending with Netflix. They have all of that classic stuff, 30s Rock, Cheers, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. House, Monk, they have a bunch of stuff listed here, Parks and Rec, all that stuff. So there's a lot of big back catalog stuff. I guess they also have Telemundo in there as well. So if you want your Spanish stuff, you can get that. They have movies in there like Fast and Furious, Bourne, Back to the Future, lots of Universal stuff in there, as well as a lot of original stuff they're going to be making. But along with this announcement, they also announced a bunch of like shows and such. Which includes some interesting stuff here, like AP Bio is coming back for season 3 just for Peacock. So that was like a cult hit show that got canceled. So now it's going to be sort of brought back just for this thing. Battlestar Galactica is coming back for a new season. With Sam Esmail producing it of Mr. Robot. So it's definitely up Phil's Avenue there. There is Dr. Death, based on a hit podcast, about a doctor that starts just killing people, his patients. Features Christian Slater and Alec Baldwin as the other two doctors who are trying to figure out a way to stop him. I think Jamie Dornan is the Dr. Death there. The second Psych movie is coming to Peacock. So that's there. They're going to do a new Punky Brewster show. Featuring Soleil Moon Frye as a single mother of three trying to get her life back on track when she meets a young girl who reminds her a lot of her younger self. Let's see. There's Rutherford Falls, which is the new show from The Good Place people, I think it is. A small town in upstate New York is turned upside down when local legend and town namesake Nathan Rutherford, played by Ed Helms, fights the moving of a historic statue. There's also a Saved by the Bell reboot that's coming. And the log line for this is amazing. When California Governor Zach Morris gets into hot water for closing too many low-income high schools, he proposes they send the affected students to the highest-performing schools in the state, including Bayside High. The influx of new students gives the overprivileged Bayside kids a much-needed and hilarious dose of reality. So they have Mario Lopez and Elizabeth Berkley on board for this, but not Mark Paul Gosselaar. But yeah, the notion that Zach Morris goes on to become governor of California is...
That's a bit of a stretch, but okay.
But it also makes sense when his character was very much like that populist guy. But yeah, there's, let's see, there's like an Odd Couple style show called Straight Talk. So the Straight Talk of the same is what happens when two opposing ideologies are forced into an odd coupling. Characters be challenged by one another, making the moral lines at which they once stood harder to define.
I'm not going to scoff at that because I've seen some professors do this with very good results. So, yeah, we'll see.
There's also a docuseries called Who Wrote That? Which is a behind-the-scenes look at SNL's most important writers.
It's basically Tina Fey and then a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good writing talent they've had over the years. Like Conan was there for a good while, John Mulaney, and a bunch of others. There's a lot of good stories, I'm sure, that comes out of that.
That'll be worth watching.
And finally, last but not least, we got a Jurassic World short film called Battle at Big Rock out now on YouTube.
Yeah, it's actually really good. It's better than Fallen Kingdom. So at the end of Fallen Kingdom, spoilers, they release the dinosaurs that are captured and were trying to auction off to the rich assholes into the wild. And like California is where they're at. I forget which state specifically, but it takes place a year later where I guess people have figured out this is happening and kind of decided to try and move on. And so it features a family... I like this camping ground that people go with their trailers. And some Triceratops show up. And then a real nasty dinosaur shows up, starts starting shit with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 8 minutes long, not too long, but it's pretty well done.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends nicely with like a bunch of like kind of found footage of other ways that people have interacted with dinosaurs since this has all happened. Like, it's like a little girl at a ranch that's getting chased by like the little dinosaurs from the beginning of two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's like one where car's coming out of a tunnel and there's like a stegosaurus there. And they go careening off the road because it's in the way. And like people hanging out in the lake with some dinosaurs also doing some stuff. Shark jumping into the air, picking up a seal. And then another dinosaur just eats both of them. There's a couple getting married and releasing the doves, and then one of the flying dinosaurs just swoops in and eats them. So there's lots of like good little stuff. This is directed by Colin Trevorrow of the other movies, so yeah.
Might be a good indication of where they're going to go.
Yeah, because that's like the most interesting thing about the movies. Like, oh, they're releasing all these into the wild.
Mm-hmm.
Now what?
And now, yeah, like how do at least Americans deal with this new like threat of creatures as they start to propagate and spread.
Hmm. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so anyway, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Indeed.
So with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question, comment, something you want us to read on there, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We have it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, archive.org, RSS, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator that you could possibly imagine. Pretty good chance we're either there or we're going to be there in the near future. So if you get to one and you see we aren't there, just wait a while. We'll pop up.
Yep.
We're kind of like hemorrhoids that way. God. No way, herpes. I meant to say herpes. I got it.
Oh my God.
And there's our show title. Anyway, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Analfo, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Good night, sleep tight.